kick things off here. So, okay, so tonight's topic is friendship. So I'll take back maybe 1 minute, less than 2 minutes. Just go through a few slides and we'll start kicking off the questions. So I want to kick off with this quote, Warren Buffett. Initially, I was admired him for his financial acumen, but this is
what we don't see anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thanks for telling me, Chris. Let me share. A bit sleep deprived here, so pardon any errors in the beginning here. But thanks for telling me. That would definitely be helpful. Okay, can you see the screen now?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so this is, I think, one of a good quote from Buffett. So, it is enormously important to have the right friends. If they make you a better person than you would otherwise be, that is the ultimate gift. So, okay, let's see. Okay, friendship requires, that rare meme betwixt likeness and unlikeness. So this is something that Chris just kind of touched upon. So I'd like to have a good discussion. You know,
Chris is pre-reading the slides here.
Pre-reading the slides, right. So we definitely want to have it. Certainly the most interesting discussions are when you have differing viewpoints, because obviously if we're all in agreement, we're just going to be saying yes, yes and no, or yes. That's what I meant to say. Friendship of utility. So... Chris, you obviously know a lot more about Aristotle than I do, but just some cursory research. So he breaks down friendship into three categories. And you know, the first two are basically just of utility. And so I gave some examples of, you know, most people, when you work for different companies, you rarely keep in touch with a coworker from 10 years ago. It's pretty rare. Friendship of pleasure. I gave an example of McCartney and Lennon. They talked maybe one or two times after the Beatles broke up. Kobe and Shaq, they really hated each other. So friendship of the good, however, this is the most lasting friendship. So, and then I give an examples where, you know, we've all been friends for more than 25 years, but some, not only anyone can be there during the good things. So let's say you have a huge bonus at work, or you know, you're some kind of accolade, but if you're there for your friends when your people are dying or there's health problems, you know, that shows true friendship. So, and then how to be a good friend. So be a good listener, exhibit empathy, ask how to be helpful, be there for them, be available, express gratitude. So definitely I'd try and thank you guys for our friendship. How not to be a good friend. So I think it's always helpful to, when you're learning something, how to invert it, just from junior high algebra. So you invert it, don't listen to them, don't show any empathy, you know, only be there for when things are great, you know, not be truthful. So I think this is something that's also a characteristic of being a good friend, where you have someone where you're constantly trying to impress the person, but you never challenge them. So I want to be challenged by my friends. So, and then I talk about, and then also, of course, as human beings, we're social. We're not designed for long periods of isolation. Just being able to share things is very, very helpful, just as far as growing as a person, getting through the tough times as well as the good times. And so let me stop there before we ask the first question, but you know, I'll get into kind of the modern with technology and how that can affect friendship. But why don't we start with you, C, or Chris with a C, just overall comments on friendship and anything you want to add before we get into questions.
Well, I think that was a very interesting summary. I think one of the things about your slide that strikes me is that friendship of utility, and the fact that sometimes we can actually confuse the type of friendship you have, whether you might think it's a friendship of the good, I think that's how you defined it, and you come to find out it's a friendship of utility, which is to say you leave a job or whatnot, and you lose a friend. So I think that's something that is interesting, because some people are very good at being a friend in a contextual environment. And I think, let's say at work, for example, they're very solid workers or coworkers, and but they may not actually end up being one of your friendships that last. I think that's interesting challenge that sometimes happens is when one person perceives a friendship one way and another person perceives it another.
How about you, Vinny?
Would you even call that? Would you even call that one a friendship then? If it's just a friendship of utility, are you just saying you're on friendly terms? I mean, you get along with them.
What would Aristotle say, Chris, with a K?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, Plato was actually probably the most preeminent, you know, Socratic philosopher era that talked about friendship in the Symposium. You know, so friendship for him was a form of love called philos. So your namesake, Phil, by the way, it's very topical that you are choosing friendship as a topic. Yeah. But anyway, what would he say about, you know, look, the Greeks had a very unusual definition of love. I don't want to shock any of the audience here, but, you know, there's a very interesting relationship between Greek males and their protege. It was a sexual one. Okay, so homosexuality in Greek culture at the time was very, you know, predominant. So, you know, I think an interesting question is whether Greek mores influence the, you know, kind of the Platonic view of friendship. So I'll leave that. I'll stop there.
But as far as Vinny's question, what would Aristotle say about being a friend if someone is just there, say, during a political discussion, you're on a political committee for a few years, and then you no longer talk to that person? Was that a friend? Or
look, from your point of view, somebody might have not been there in your time of need, okay? But you don't know their life. So they might have been struggling as well, and they might have viewed you not being there in their time of need. So, you know, our lives are interesting. We all live our lives, but we don't know what's going on with somebody else, ultimately, you know? And so we might be hurt in the moment, you know, that, you know, this person failed to represent what friendship means to me. But I think at the end of it, they might have been in circumstances you just were not aware of, you know? And so I think extending compassion is a key component of friendships.
But if I asked you that question, Chris, with a C, then there's an acquaintance or a coworker, and then there's a friend. So, like, obviously there's degrees of friendship, someone you talk to several times a week as opposed to, and that's something I'll get into later, maybe once every 5 years. Like, would you accord, or would that definition still fit a friendship if you get along really well with somebody at work? Is that enough to be considered a friend?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think there is something called seasonality, you know, to many things in life, right? We, life is, from one perspective, takes a while, can take many decades. And if you're fortunate to live that long, and many things change in your life over time. And so I think the fact that you might not be friends after 5 years isn't necessarily mean you were never friends. But I also think that there are some people who are, I think, you know, it could be that you're in a work environment and you find someone reliable, you know, someone who's supportive. And that can be, you know, a function of their being a very good coworker. And I think being a very good coworker looks a lot like friendship. And I think that's probably a good thing. So I think it's also the case that those strong friendships don't really require that you have spoken in the last 10 years, 15 years. I find that it's interesting that there are some people you have as friends, and when you talk to them after a 15-year break or a 5-year break, it's like you spoke last week. You know, there's something about the relationship that isn't bound by time or circumstance. And I think your slide actually spoke to it to some significant extent when you talked about the fact that I think those relationships tend to be ones where individuals have within the relationship an accountability and a mutual perceived desire to see that the other person improves or meets a standard. I think, you know, achieve certain values. I think those are the relationships that are probably the most motivating to people.
I mean, go back to your question, Vidi, if I could bring Kobe and Shaq up again, I don't really honestly think they were friends. And I've followed Kobe and Shaq quite a bit. Kobe, I admire a lot. Shaq, we can talk about that later. He has charisma and he can be charming, but he was very lazy on the basketball court. He was a real jerk to Kobe, but Kobe was pretty demanding. So that was strictly just a coworker relationship.
Right. That sounded more like when I saw that on your slide and what you said about them, also they didn't really like each other. That didn't strike me as a friendship then. I mean, if anything, it was just like a business. As far as your categories, that was more like the business type. I mean, they were colleagues of sorts.
You're right.
They were teammates, but it didn't sound like they were friends at all. Not even like,
yeah.
I mean, they might have been on reasonably good terms during a game or something, because they have to be their allies in that sense. But that didn't strike me as a friendship at all, actually. Yeah. Based on what you said, I mean, I don't really know anything about them.
I mean, it's a good question, like, how do you define friendship? So is it je ne sais quoi, as the French would say? I mean, there's got to be something where I agree with Chris, where you can be a coworker and you can get along with someone. That doesn't mean they're your friend. So there's a je ne sais quoi, there's an element there that I think that's hard to articulate, because you don't necessarily have to be seeing them outside of work. You don't necessarily even have to be talking to them ever again, maybe after you leave the company. But I think there's something about a shared value, maybe with that particular person, is maybe one way to describe it. What are your thoughts, Vinny, on how you would?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I can think of colleagues like that where I, you know, just thinking honestly, when I leave, they're probably not going to be, we're probably not going to keep in touch much. But we do. But when we are, especially when it's more in the office, well, even online, actually, there's a different kind of relationship. There's a different kind of friendship there. But in the office, especially, I mean, we would talk about things other than work, you know, because we were together so much. And then we would talk about other things, music, all sorts of things. But we never got together outside of work. And you know, to some extent, some of the people preferred it that way. But also, I mean, it just, I don't know, everybody has their own lives, their own friends. You know, different social lives, different back. I mean, just based on people they grew up with, people they live near, things like that. But I mean, so I would say it's more than just colleagues. We're not just colleagues on friendly terms either. We're friends, but I don't think, with one or two exceptions, maybe, I don't think we'll be keeping in touch much after, you know, at some point one of us will go our own ways as far as a different job. And then we might see each other on Facebook or something. That's about it, you know. To have each other on Facebook, that kind of thing, you know, thumbs up on Facebook, but not real friend, you know, not like an ongoing relationship.
And I think there's a genuine interest too, because you'll have someone will pop into your office and say, "Hey, how was your weekend?" And but it's just a formality; they don't really give a damn. But which is fine, because you may not really care about how their weekend or their life is too. But there are some people who will ask you that question, and they will genuinely want to know, "How are you doing? How is everything?" And others are, "Hey, how was your weekend? Oh, by the way, you know, we had this meeting coming up." You know, that's obviously a different. But Chris, go ahead, Vinny.
Sorry. I mean, sorry, just to go back to what I mean, just thinking about what the other kind of friendship that Chris Reed was discussing, and you know, I've had friends like that, and Chris and I were you know, had that kind of relationship for a long time, and then we really didn't speak to each other for a long time, not because we were mad or anything, but we really just went very separate. I mean, he lived out in California, and you know, I was married and stuff, and we just hardly ever talked. I mean, when he didn't come back all that much, I don't think. And when he did, you know, he was with family and stuff, and we didn't really have time to reach out and stuff. We just kind of lost touch that way. But I mean, you know, before that though, we were close friends in high school. And then those first few years after college, I mean, that's the kind of where we had the thing where we wouldn't see each other or talk to each other, maybe not even on the phone or anything, for months. But then we saw each other at Christmas or summer. It was just like it used to be. You know, we just like knew each other really well. But I think part of what creates that kind of relationship, and I've had it with other people too, and with some cousins, like my cousins in India, is that there is a time period when you do see each other frequently. Chris and I see each other every day at school when we went to high school. or the cousins I lived with in India for a few months during the summers when I was a kid. I mean, that creates that foundation, and it's with that foundation that you can go back and then pick things up again, and then leave them for several months or even years, and then go back to how things were within almost immediately, because you have that foundation. Without that, I think it's really unusual if that happens. Just on that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point about the foundation. Chris, with a K, how would you describe as far as people you work with, and it people that you think were a friend, and as opposed to just a coworker?
Yeah, you know, first of all, you know, it's I don't like comparing. You know, there's friendships of all sorts of varieties. There are deep friendships that, you know, have lasted decades. There's friendships that you make in a few days, and unfortunately, due to time and circumstance, it has to end. But I think all friendships are valuable. Having said that, yeah, I mean, the long-lasting friendships, those that you've known for more than 20 years, I mean, that's those are unique friendships because they know you through your seasons.
And Chris with a C, you want to follow up anything on Vinny said? He mentioned him going to high school with you. And
yeah, you know, I was thinking a little bit about that. And I do think there's something to be said for, you might say sometimes those long-term friendships, maybe they're forged in fire. You know, I think that what those friendships, there's a component where the individuals come to recognize that there's some kind of, you're there for your friend. At some point, one of you has to be there for the other. And I think that's what it brings a relationship to a different level. You know, it's when you're not there, as you point out in your slides, you're not there to have a good time, but you're trying to solve a problem, right? Or there's a trauma, and and addressing that trauma. And I think that's something which, even as an adult, as an adult, it's more rare, actually. I think when people are younger, it's easier for them to do this. And I think when people are older, they're more aware of what it will cost them to be that kind of friend. You know, they think, well, it may take a lot of time. It may take some a lot of resources. It may take some money. But when you're young, I think maybe you're conditioned or not conditioned, but you're programmed to a certain extent to throw yourself into a relationship, you know, to commit yourself to somebody when there's a difficult or trying circumstance. So I think that's probably a key component of it. And I think, you know, there's something about the way we're designed and built that we have the ability to form relationships. And I think that's one of the most powerful things, you know, that we have about being a human, is you can get on a plane, go anywhere in the world. You don't even have to speak the language, you know, you get off the plane and you signal to somebody like, I'm lost, someone will usually try to help you, you know? So there's something about, you know, I think that's probably one of the reasons humans are successful, as well as that ability to form connection. But I do think that long-lasting ones, there must be something that the individuals have undertaken together or experience that they have suffered through that tends to connect them, I think.
Well, yeah, that was one of my questions, is how strong is a friendship if you haven't spoken in, say, 5 or whatever amount you want to put on it. But that's, as you mentioned, like there's a foundation, or as Chris mentioned, there's things that they're going through. So that doesn't mean that it's necessarily or a stronger or weaker friendship. So is there agreement with everyone there? So let's say if you have one person where you talk maybe 3-4 times a month, and someone you haven't talked to in 10 years, can you, if we get into, say, a logic, if you want to use symbols and things, well, you probably can't even break friendship down like that as far as duration or temporality. Can you break time as a component of friendship? Just kick it out, that off to everybody.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, please.
Absolutely not. I mean, friendships can't be measured in time. You know, you can make a friendship with an animal, for example. You know, when I first met some of my pets, I became friends with them within a day, like my best friends within a day. And of course, we have friendships that, you know, are 20 years old. So I don't think they can be compared. I think they're all valuable in their own way. There's no anger here. You know, if somebody you haven't spoken to in 5 years or 10 years, look, they might have gone through their own struggles, their own goals. As a friend, you have to support people's decisions, even if you're not part of their life for a certain period. It just can't be compared. And sometimes it works out that you can be part of people's lives on a regular basis, and you value that. But there's no anger, no hate. It's all about love. I think I'm going to get to defend this as a Kantian Platonic view, but it's all about love. You know, no room for hate.
But it's, if can you rank degrees of friendship? I'm not saying that there's any ill will or at all for, let's say, someone you haven't spoken to and or you'll never speak to again. It's just, obviously, we have different obligations, like Vinny was bringing up. You know, we're not in high school anymore. We have, in some cases, you know, kids we're raising, and you've got jobs and responsibilities. So, you know, obviously, it's never going to be like it was in high school when you're around each other several days or several hours every single day. But is it a reasonable question to ask is if there's you can be a better friend if you stay in touch with someone as opposed to someone that doesn't stay in touch? I'm not saying that they're, you don't have the same affection for someone you haven't spoken to, but as far as if you ask a question, who was, you know, maybe let's use that word, a better friend. Is that a reasonable question?
I don't like that question.
Like, you're like all Mr. Kumbaya here. I'm gonna
let me just say one thing and I'm gonna stop talking. I know I've kind of hogged a little of the time here.
Right, go ahead.
But like, if I compared Vinny, Chris, and Phil as who's a better friend? No, y'all are all
no, we don't have to make this personal.
For decades, there's no ranking. Y'all are unique individuals. And we have a unique relationship. I can't, it's apples and oranges.
Yeah. No, I'm asking more of a professorial point of mm-hmm. view, not necessarily personal, but yeah. Like Chris with a C, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I think about what I would call the tyranny of the urgent. And I think that at some point we realize that the things that are urgent are not always the most important. Typically, they're not very important. And the things that are very important are rarely seem urgent. And when people tend to attend to the urgent more than the important. That's one of the reasons that goal setting, for example, is very important. But just for just to give it an example, you know, when I left Arlington and went to military school, I mean, I couldn't use the phone for about 2 years. If you were going to use the phone, we didn't have cell phones. Remember that early. In the late 80s, so you'd have to go to the basement, use the coin-operated phone, okay? And you can only go down there at certain times of day, which might not correlate with when other people would want to be. So I probably called my parents once a semester. So there are certain things, and you know, they had, and I had. I remember taking 27 credit hours a semester. So I mean, there are things that. Now, would that be my choice? And I had to do it all over again. I don't think so. But I think that that's kind of thing that sometimes you deal with circumstances that are not really your choosing or also, you know, which what you would think ideal, but we tend to get, you know, especially at that age, you tend to caught up with whatever your environment tells you have to do. But hopefully at some point in time, you're able to make decisions about how you spend your time. I think, you know, you made one of those decisions recently when you decided to go out on your own, right? So you're out on your own. Now you make your own schedule. You decide how much time you're going to spend on different work activities. And it's more under your control. And your schedule will probably be more of a reflection of your values and the way you see it as opposed to, you know, your employer. So I think, but I think that the interesting thing about those friendships that we're talking about, the ones that last decades, is that you don't feel you have to call that person for them to be your friend. Mm-hmm. Now, if one friend in a group of friends or in a pair of friends is somebody who sends cards, who remembers birthdays, that's great, right? It's all the better. But no one really feels like I have to get that card or that person isn't my friend anymore, right? You wouldn't think that. You know, you wouldn't think that if they don't, in fact, you probably figure they're not calling me because they're dealing with whatever they're dealing with. you know, and they're doing their thing. But I think but getting back to this other point, I think it's something, you know, someone expressed to me many years ago, because I think it's worth emphasizing for, you know, the sake of whoever's listening to this, that when we do attend to the urgent, we will tend to do whatever, you know, comes across our desk, right? Whatever's on our plate. But that's what prevents us sometimes from doing long-term planning or from thinking about what's really going to be, making decisions that are really going to have positive consequences in our lives. Because if we're only responding to what is urgent, then we're not pursuing a longer-term agenda. And but those two things are always in tension. And again, as someone said, and I think if we think about it, you may agree. The things that are urgent are rarely important, and the things that are important rarely seem urgent. You know, like, I mean, right now, it probably doesn't seem urgent to start your daughter's savings account, right? Investing for her life. It doesn't seem urgent. You can do it tomorrow or the next week, right? But it's probably pretty important, you know? And I think that's kind of, I think that one lesson is a really important one. And I just think that's something that is worth giving, you know, reversing and giving more time to the important and less time to the urgent.
Okay. And then, Vinny, and then same question. I mean, again, just from not trying to rank on this panel, that's not one of my intention, just as far as an abstract question. If they ever, I guess college, maybe there's probably never ever been a course on friendship taught, but if you were ever to teach a course on friendship, would you put in the syllabus as far as someone that has a function of time is an element of the strength of the friendship?
Well, okay. Well, so, I mean, first of all, that if you're going to say, is this person a good friend? I mean, so that's one way of appraising. There's one thing about you're appraising a friend, like how good of a friend they are. And that's different than appraising a friendship, right? Like how strong of a friendship. So those are two different things. But I mean, to some extent, I agree with Chris Achari that, I mean, you know, it's a little, well, I don't know that calling someone a good friend is, I mean, I'm not sure that's never appropriate, but I think it's overly simplistic because there are, you know, like he's saying, there are a variety of relationships of all sorts. I mean, and I don't even think you need to categorize them as friend or non-friend or even into, you know, four types of love or something like the way that, you know, some of the philosophers do. I mean, because they're, to some extent, they might blend various types of friendship relationship. But I mean, even that, it's just, I don't know. I think it's better to just qualitatively describe them, and you're going to notice patterns. And in that, to that extent, they're categories and types of friendship. But as far as appraising friendships, and again, the strength of the friendship, I mean, I do think there are certain things that are notable, though. Like you said, I mean, is this person a fair weather friend or a casual friend? I mean, is this the kind of person that's going to, you know, not be there for you when you say, okay, I really do need your help this time? You know, are they the kind of person that, you know, you haven't talked to in years, but they find, you know, but you know them really well, and you find out a close family member died or something, and you call? I mean, is that going to affect you quite a bit, or is it just like this person's no longer in your life? It doesn't even affect you that much. I mean, those are things I think that are various measures of a friendship, not necessarily a evaluation of it, though, not in terms of good or bad, but they do measure certain things that are important, I think, as far as qualities of the relationship.
You know, I'd like to respond to that. I mean, you know, again, when you're in your circumstance and you're struggling through a particular difficulty, and you rely on others to help you, they might be going through a very comparable circumstance. And, you know, unless you walk a mile in somebody's shoes, I think it's really hard to kind of judge, you know, why were they not there for you? You live your own life, you know, we all live our own lives. And I don't know, sometimes it's hard to kind of just say that if somebody wasn't there for you, you know, write them off. I mean, it's,
I wouldn't say that. I said that we should evaluate whether they're good. I'm saying you shouldn't say that means they're a good friend or a bad friend. I'm saying that that's one aspect of a relationship, one way of characterizing it. But it doesn't mean, I mean, like you said, the fact that they didn't respond, I mean, it's a disposition, the fact that they didn't respond for one reason or another, that wouldn't be a sufficient basis to say, well, this person is not a close, or our friendship is not a close friendship because this person wasn't there. I mean, there are a variety of reasons they might not have been there. And that's only one, you know, that would only be one event. Maybe they have a hard time dealing with death, but they just shut down when anybody. I mean, it's just, it's very easy to oversimplify it when you're trying to categorize it, but just so, there's so much diversity, it's just very qualitatively complex.
Yeah, and again, I'm just asking questions. I'm not ranking, I don't have a spreadsheet, just to be clear. This is a function of time. Here's my friend, X plus Y, you know, so just asking the question of time. But most people probably don't even know if you're going through a hard time because you may not be speaking to them, just because life is so consuming of responsibilities. You're in different stages of your life. You may connect with somebody, you know, several years later, or maybe never. That doesn't mean that you're, you know, I have friends can probably think of, if I think about it from when I was a kid, that doesn't mean that those weren't great friends at the time. That doesn't diminish there. In fact, Daniel Kahneman something he had in his book, Thinking Fast and Slow, which I really liked, is, I think, I don't know the exact term he gave it, but it's essentially a time bias, where they gave this experiment where people would listen to a song, and at the very last, say, 3 seconds, the record would skip, or, you know, I know that's we don't have records nowadays, but something would come up with a quality in the last 3 seconds, and the reaction was, there's no proportionality, it's very disproportionate, where I'll have to pull the book to see the exact statistic, but you would think that they would still love this song, but it wouldn't. It was such asymmetric, as Kahneman's point. So if you're a friend with somebody for so long, and you have say one minor disagreement, there seems to be a cognitive flaw, if you will, with humans as far as how they appraise a relationship.
I don't think people lose friendships over disagreements. I think what happens sometimes is that when we come to believe or see a relationship as being in this higher category, the type of relationship where you have greater expectation from somebody, right? I mean, for example, there are relationships. There's a proverb that says, you know, there's a friend that's closer than a brother, right? And so when you have that kind of friend, what you appreciate about that kind of friend, I think, tends to be two things. One, you believe they'll be there when you need them. And two, those are relationships, I guess I said before, of accountability, or the relationships about what should we do? You know, or how should we live? You know, those relationships, after 10 or 20 years, someone calls and says, hey, I'm trying to figure out which job to take, right? And you don't miss a beat. You talk about which job they should take, or I have this problem at work. How do you think I should handle it? Or the question is, what do you think is the right thing to do in this situation? And I think, you know, those relationships which are about how we should live, and where you ask each other ethical questions, I think those relationships tend to be very long lasting. And I think when we have a relationship like that, and then for some reason, somebody, as Chris says, you know, they might be going through something in their own life, and when that time comes and you need them and they're not there, and they say they can't be there, I think that hurts people. And I think really what happens is that at that moment, people begin to mourn the relationship that they thought they had, or maybe they did have at one time. They think, well, that relationship's no longer that relationship, and there's some hurt there. But I think most likely that the hurt is only there because we had expectation, because the person had been such a good friend before. And so that's, you know, that is one of those things where you have to really temper your expectation. And, but I do think it's a particular, but I will say this, I'm from a large family, many kids in the family, and I have probably gotten a couple of years not talking to my siblings. Okay. So I may be talking to a different sibling during that time period. You know, but I think we rotate around. At certain times, you're talking to somebody and talking to somebody else. I think that's that seasonality reflects many things, and doesn't necessarily mean that there's something that was missing from the relationship.
How about as far as the, if we mix technology into it, there, I was listening to a podcast and this guy was talking about asking him to take his son to a concert. And he was talking about playing, I forget the which video game it was, Fortnite or something. It's showing maybe age here. But so there's a question about technology. Like he says, no, I'm not going to, I saw Travis Scott in concert during this Fortnite or whatever game he's playing. And then the guy on the podcast was kind of thinking, well, that's so weird. You know, I'm not going to take my son or daughter to a concert. Or so my question is to the panel is, the change of a friend, of the friendship itself, if it's only through a computer as opposed to actually, quote, being there. So Chris with a K, we went to several concerts together. Very, very enjoyable. I think there's is there not something that people would be missing? Or am I just being showing some technological crankiness?
No. Again, I think there's all sorts of varieties of friendships. I mean, like, I value, for example, you know, all three of us, I don't know if Chris is still there, but we've been to concerts together. I mean, and you can't replace that with anything. You know, those are memorable experiences of my life. Those are some of the best experiences of my life. So, I mean, that in person, well, in general, I miss concerts since COVID.
Yeah.
But in general, yeah, I mean, I missed in person, but you know, virtual relationships are nice too. I mean, I'm enjoying our podcast or, video cast, whatever you want to call it. You know, this is a really, nice way to stay connected with people I've known for many years, you know, without having to deal with traffic, without having to deal with lots of logistics problems. It's very comfortable. I like this technology. I mean, do I want to meet you up at a restaurant with a, you know, a cold beer? Of course. But this is comfortable too. I like this.
Yeah. Same question to you, Vinny. Is this a generational? Is this something that I'm missing? But and maybe this is something that people are just going through because of COVID. But I don't. As far as, I don't know how prevalent this is amongst teenagers, but is this what I guess teenagers are doing? And if so, are they missing out on something as far as by not being there if it's just through a computer?
I mean, well, you know, when you say generational, we're old, but we also,
yes, we are old.
No, we are old, but we also we spent a fair amount of time online too.
True.
So, I mean, some of the closest friendships I had, the best friendships have been those where there's a significant amount of, and this even includes some recent work friendships where we've all started working from home as it was a mandatory thing. And so now we collaborate on Teams. I mean, we're on Teams, but then we're talking to each other all day on Teams instead of just in the office. But what I'm saying is that some of the best friendships, I think, are those where have both components, because there are things you can say to people online, I mean, things that you say in chat or, you know, typing online that you might not say in person. But then there's certainly things that you and that can be a negative thing, too. You could say something mean to somebody, I guess, too, you know, online. Then you see them in person. You're like, oh, well, you know, you're thinking these things because you're reading. You're hearing something that you're hearing a tone of voice that they didn't actually intend or something like that, right? I'm sure we've all experienced this in one way or another. Yeah. And then you see them in person, you're like, oh, well, they're not, you know, they're not mad. They're just being normal. And I mean, anyway, so I think those are some of the richest friendships actually have both of those elements these days. I do think if you only have the online friendships though, you are missing a very basic experience that I think is just irreplaceable. I mean, and there are people, there are friends I've had when I used to be on IRC a lot more on internet chat and stuff. I mean, there are friends I've had where I never met them or talked to them on the phone even. And I do think that can be, I mean, to some extent that can also be a false friendship in the sense, I mean, there could be certain elements of it anyway that are not as real as you think that are kind of in your mind, because when you might not have the same kind of rapport with them offline. But again, I mean, back to Chris Chari's point, I mean, that's still a relationship of its own kind, and it's not necessarily one that has to be lesser than the in-person relationship. But to me, I think the richest relationships are ones that include, the richest ones tend to include both these days anyway. But there is a sort of, if I had to choose one or the other, I mean, if you only have one, I would certainly choose the in-person kind. I think that's going to be the richer kind overall.
I'm going to put out a controversial theory. I think, you know, Eros, so, you know, Plato talked about the, I hate to say the word, sexual part of love, okay? That's in-person. But Philo's friendship, I like the friendship like this. Frankly, I'd rather turn off our video and just talk on the phone because I'm enjoying the interchange of ideas. I don't need to look at you expressing them. I can listen to you and understand your ideas. And so I was going to offer as a social experiment for 5 minutes for us to all turn off our videos and, you know, as a practical question, a social experiment, to see whether our friendship changes when we don't see each other in person.
Okay, for 5 minutes.
We'll try 5 minutes and then we'll come back online and then, you know,
okay.
In person as normal.
We could, okay, we can do that. I do want to mention though that that's a, it's still contingent on us having seen each other before quite a bit in person.
For 25 years.
Well, Phil asked the questions about virtual relationships. And I'm asking the question about whether it really matters. Yeah, okay. Experiment.
Okay. No, I'm not saying it's not valuable in its own right. Phil's the only one that just refuses to turn off his video. We have to see him because he's the moderator.
Well, let me get Chris with a C, and then we can.
Chris with a K has his picture up still. Chris, can you get rid of your picture?
No, I didn't disable that. I'm sorry. I'm trying to get rid of that.
I think this might be the last slide, so we're almost done. I the next one is frequency. I already asked that question. Yeah, that's basically it. So let me ask a question to you, Chris, with the C. That same question about what was the question? I got sidetracked.
About virtual versus real friendship, something like that, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, I would say, I think that this technology is great. I think if we'd had this technology when we were 18 years old, then a lot of these people that we have not spoken to in 10 or 15 years, it might not be 10 or 15 years since we've spoken to them. I think just text messages, right? I think if we had all their contacts in our phone from high school, it's much more likely that we would occasionally send them a text. Mm-hmm. I think that's a valuable thing. I think that I personally find this technology very powerful. I think with the images, I sometimes almost feel like I was with the person. And I think that that's, without the images, I think, you know, having just even phone communications is very powerful also. But I think being able to see the person and see facial expression, I think does make some difference. I think, again, it comes down to the central question for me, which is, so I'll tell you a quick story, okay? This is my little anecdote. I was about, I don't know, I must be like fourth grade or fifth grade, probably fifth grade. Someone said to me, you know, as things happen in elementary school, so-and-so, a guy I didn't really know very well, a kid didn't know very well, it wants to fight you. Right? So-and-so wants to fight you after school today, right? And you're thinking, okay, well, I got a slight problem. I have to have a fight after school today. But interestingly, in the 10-year-old brain, that's not a problem you can't overcome. It's just a problem. It's like many problems you have during the day. But as the day wore on, that was like in the morning, as the day wore on, someone said, well, look, you know, you're not just going to be fighting, you know, the guy's name was Larry. You're also going to be fighting Albert and Ray. I'm like, what? I was like, okay, wait, I'm fighting three people now, right? So, and then suddenly I remember two of my classmates came up to me, and I remember their names, and they said, oh, we're going to fight with you. And which was interesting. And then what was really got weird is that they started figuring out who was going to fight whom. And then, like, you know, so I wasn't actually fighting Larry at the end. I was going to fight a kid named Albert. Okay. So, but the point is, these two kids you know, who were in my class, but I didn't really, I mean, they were my best friends. I was friendly with them. When they said, we're going to fight with you, I think there was something very powerful about that. And I think that's why I remember it to this day, that, you know, a friend is someone who does two things, I think. One, they're there in time of trouble. And secondly, that a really strong friendship is one which is, I think, is about, again, how should we live? Someone who you can challenge about what is right and what's wrong, and you can tell them you think they're wrong and why they, and you try to convince them why they're wrong. And likewise, they can do the same for you. And I think a virtual relationship can have those components. And so if those elements are there, I don't think it matters whether it's virtual or whether or not you've spoken in 5 or 10 years. I think those are things that connect you in a way that are powerful, because that is rare, I think. So, but that's my take, and not seeing your images makes a difference. Why tell a story?
Yeah, it does. So yeah, though, Chris had a good, experiment there as far as, cause it does change. Like if we,
it's a matter of feedback.
Yeah. Before you had cell phones, it was all audio. You would never see the person's reactions. And that, it, that is a different, take on the friendship. And it's interesting, just kind of when I was reading various biographies where, you know, Einstein and just take two popping into my head, Einstein and Steve Jobs, completely different people and fields, but the walks with friends were one of the most best parts of their lives, I think. Not only did they help their friendship, but it helped their professional life. So a lot of Einstein's problems he was working out, he would go on a walk with some friends, and he would at some point have more clarity on the question. And the same with Steve Jobs. So that's something that there's a spontaneity, I think, when you're there. Obviously, you know, if the technology is great and it does help solve the logistical problems, but I agree with Vinny, there's a more of a richness when you're there with someone. And it's, so for example, taking a walk with friends, that's something that the spontaneity, the just being outside, talking, you're not, there's something there that I think technology can't capture.
Hey, can I ask, I requested a 5-minute experiment.
Oh.
I didn't mean for this to be the duration of our conversation.
Oh, okay.
You can turn your video back on.
Are you missing us?
I'm going to wait for Chris. Chris is the holdout here.
Did I talk for a whole 5 minutes? I apologize.
No, okay. I have to admit, I was a little more anxious when I didn't have some visual feedback. My anxiety increased a little more. I had to focus more on my sound versus looking at your lips. Like there's like a combination of effects that convey information. So my anxiety overall increased without having the visual feedback. What was your initial visceral reactions?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely changed it where you, like you mentioned, you don't see the facial expressions, and you, I think you focus a little more on what you're thinking about, and so you're a little more focused maybe on the content. What are your thoughts, Vinny?
Well, see, again, I mean, it's still a useful exercise. It's, I don't think it's really giving you a comparison, though, just an audio, an auditory versus a visual or holistic, you know, multidimensional, multisensory friendship or something like that. Because it, I mean, like even as you were doing that, I mean, heck, even now we have the video, half the time I'm looking at my screen, but I'm still listening. So, I mean, no offense, I'm just saying, it's an experience. But also, I mean, even when you guys were talking without the video, I was still visualizing what, I mean, like, when, you know, when Chris Reed was talking, I was still imagining him say it. I was still visualizing it. So, I mean, because I have seen him. So, I mean, it's supervening. It's there's this dependence on pre-existing experience, pre-existing memories of the other kind of experience. It's not the same as an experiment where you're really comparing this type of friendship versus the other type of friendship, or, I mean, or even this type of interaction versus the other kind, because we've had most of our interactions have still included other elements. And so just if you take part of it, let's say we never met in person and we just started the podcast, well, our relationships would be very different than they are now, having had a lot of interaction in person and then coming onto the podcast and doing this for a few months the way we have. I mean, it just changes the entire character of the relationship. So I don't think you're not really comparing offline and online. I mean, online and offline that way.
I'll briefly tell you from a work perspective, most customers don't want to be, you know, filmed or video. They prefer verbal communication.
Understand that.
There's very few I've seen that really care to look at who they're interacting with. Unless it's Eros, that's entirely different because Eros is visually based. But yeah. Philo is not visually based. I couldn't care whether you look like ogres or you were, you know, Prince Charming. I really couldn't care. I mean, our friendship is based on personality similarities. Eros is different. So I don't really care about the only thing I'm missing, why it's giving me anxiety, is when I say something, I can't see your reaction to it, whether you're taking it negatively or positively. So that does give me some anxiety in terms of our feelings friendship.
Well, this was, and I mean, even before COVID, it would be this way where whenever we have most of the work I do is through email, but there are a lot of times when you realize, you know, if we just did this by phone, we could probably, email is great when you have, you can send each other examples and things much more easily than you can over the phone with this, because it's kind of computer software stuff. But on the other hand, when you're trying to discuss something and you're talking past each other, it goes on and on, you can sometimes resolve it much faster just by having a conversation over the phone. So, you know, a lot of times we'll do that, we do it by scheduling a call. And even before the COVID, I mean, we would usually schedule the call as a web call, like a WebEx or something like that. But it's not the kind of call, we don't use webcams and look at each other. We look at each other's screen sometimes. So I mean, the visual can be really helpful in that respect. But yeah, I mean, I agree that most people don't really need to see. In fact, there are times when occasionally somebody will say, you know, because we'll know our customers really well just from interactions with them, and they'll say, oh, this is this customer, because they'll find them on LinkedIn or something. I really don't even want to see them. I don't want to see what they look like. I don't want that to affect my perception of somebody. I'd rather not know. You know, I don't want to have any preconceptions, and I don't want to have them validated or invalidated or anything. I don't want that to be, you know, I don't think that's really that important either, ultimately, when it comes to relationships like that, when you're not talking about any romantic or sexual component, when it's just, you know, when you're talking about working with somebody, you really don't need to know how they look.
Well, what are your any other lingering questions? I mean, I pretty much went through the presentation. I mean, I did kick it off with a quote from Buffett. Is what are your thoughts on his quote as far as the ultimate gift, a friend can make you a better person? Like, what else is it about friendship besides just enjoying everyone's company? Would you say that is important for a great friendship?
Can I say something for a minute? Don't want to take too long. I don't know. I think, first of all, I have all sorts of friends. I've made friends with my cat 5 minutes. I mean, I have all sorts of friendships. So I don't like comparing them. But I have to say my friendships with you in particular, not to be over-emotional, has made me question, analyze my life better. It's this sounds from a movie, but made my life better. Mm-hmm. Having our friendships, it forced me to grow in ways I would not expect.
Would you agree?
I was very over. emotional.
That's fine. Yeah. Well, would you agree with Buffett? Is that the ultimate gift to someone to make them a better person, or do you disagree?
There's lots of gifts. Buffett's all quantitative. He's about maximizing value.
He's talking about friendship. He's not doing a spreadsheet.
Yeah, there's no ranking. I know you want to, not you, but Buffett or maybe in general, there's a personality disposition that wants to quantify everything, rank everything, so you can make optimal economic decisions by maximizing the values. Okay, that's an approach.
He wasn't doing Buffett wasn't doing economics when he said, it doesn't sound like he's doing economics.
It's a caricature.
Buffett, can you just make a statement? Can you just evaluate it on its own merits? Just the statement? Aside from the fact that he's an economist and a wealthy person, anyway.
Yeah.
But in general, it's a laudable statement.
I mean, how would you, Noel, define what's the most important? Go ahead and mention what makes a great friendship. Like, what?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, sure.
Can we go in turn then, please?
Yeah.
We all have to ask that question.
Okay, Vinny.
I'll start. I'll start. Yeah. I'll give a 30-second response. They will limit it to 30 seconds for everybody. Or 1 minute.
He took over moderator duties. He's defined the time.
just go ahead.
I could go on for an hour or 2 hours on this. Okay,
don't do that. So just go.
I'm trying to limit my communication as well.
Okay, now it took me 1 hour and 49 minutes because you're taking 10 minutes talking about that. Now go ahead.
I'll take a minute. Again, I think there's many varieties of friendship. There's many varieties of love. And, you know, certain relationships you have with people aren't long-lasting for many reasons. It doesn't make it less valuable, okay? I think these things can't be quantified. It's apples and oranges. It's comparing, it's a category mistake, fundamentally. I don't like comparing them. I mean, I've had friendships that lasted a day and they were valuable. And then I had friendships that lasted for decades and they're valuable. Why compare them? Like, what's the goal of comparing them or quantifying them? I think, first of all, the ambition to quantify it is misdirected, and I think the ability to quantify it is untenable. I don't think you can quantify it, and you shouldn't quantify it.
Have you had friendships that lasted for decades that weren't so valuable?
No, all friendships that have lasted for decades are all valuable. If it lasted for decades,
well, like your friendship with Gary, for example,
I consider my friendship with Gary very valuable. I try to stay in contact with him. He's a difficult man to deal with.
Okay, I'm gonna edit this part out. So,
I mean, he has no response.
I would just give you a hard time.
Now, those were interesting conversations. I enjoyed our conversations with Gary. You know, I'll edit this part out, but yeah, he was, there are parts of, but yeah, I don't want to speak any ill will of him at this, but yeah, so I was actually, you keep going to the quantitative. I was just asking, my question to you, Chris, was, well, the question of what makes a good friendship, but you keep going back to the ranking. I didn't ask that at all.
I have a controversial suggestion. Have you thought about inviting Gary to these? It might make it really that's too much.
I wouldn't want that. No. I mean, to be honest, he dominates conversations too much. It'd be too hard online.
Yeah. And that's just the last few years are way too difficult. I don't even want to get into it here. But anyway, Chris with a C, let's just go to the original. And if there's any other questions you guys want to bring up, but what makes a good friendship to you? And then, and if you want to bring up, maybe the last question we can end with is as far as if you can communicate with your younger self, or let's say you were giving a talk to some kids, like what can you do to become a good friend, and or to what would you want to impart to young people about friendship?
Well, it's a very difficult question. Why'd you have to change it now? wait a second. Wait, I want to be the last person to answer that question. You know, I was thinking earlier about the definition of friendship, and I remember something that Jesus said. He said, I no longer call you my servants. He's talking to his disciples, but I call you my friends, because when someone knows your business, they're your friends. And he made the point that, you know, everything that he has learned, he's imparted to them. And I think, I think a friend is someone who is, you know, they're intimate in the sense that they are aware of what your goals and objectives are. You share that with them. And I think he also said something very interesting. At another point, he said, no greater love has a man than to lay down his life for his friends. And so I think that, you know, I think, you know, and people, and the reality is that from time to time in life, some people are called upon to lay down their lives, you know, and they, and many people, you know, they do. And often with very little time to think, you know, a car that's speeding towards you, right? And you push your friend out of the way, or a child who falls in the water. Sometimes we do. Now, you're not obligated to do it. Chris is nodding his head. No one says you're obligated to do it, but it's an extreme form of love to when you do something like that. And I think that's what he said. He didn't say you're obligated to do it. And I think that friendships, I think in some ways, maybe I'll just say this. I think what's cool about friendship, really, really interesting friendships. I mean, I think what's great about this podcast is that, and I said before, it's a lot of it's about how should we live, right? You know, these ethical conversations, moral conversations. I wake up sometimes in the middle of the night or the next day thinking about what we talked about, you know, on this call. And I think that's what makes it very, you know, for me, exciting and useful and interesting, is that I think about what I said as well. I don't agree with that anymore. You know, so that's fun. And I think that's those relationships that push you in that way are the most useful relationships. And I think really good friendships, sometimes you almost begin to lose where you start and where you end and where the next person starts, you know. And I think that's a very powerful thing.
Well, and what Chris kind of remembers or brings back from my memories is when you were mentioning about being in a fight. I remember I played a little bit of sports, and I remember one soccer game where I was going towards a goal and this guy slide tackled me, and one of my closest friends said that every time he gets down here, I'm taking him down. And that guy was like, you know, that stands out to me. Like, I still remember that.
Right.
And I remember other times where somebody looked at me wrong in a bar, and this one of my friends wanted to kick the guy's ass. Like, and so that there's definitely that it's kind of a primal there, but that probably maybe speaks to gangs, and where there's an expression where the best friend, I'm paraphrasing, is someone that will help you bury the body. So no, I'm not, you know, I'm not talking about advocating a murder here or anything, but someone, you know, you get the point, where someone that will be
there. They'll be with you the worst possible circumstance.
Yeah, willing to risk prison for you. I mean, that you can't, and that, I think that's where if you apply, I've never been in a gang, but where you can, I think people go into gangs where someone that's going to be there for battle, for death, I mean.
Can I take 1 minute to answer that, Phil?
Yeah.
Just my perspective. As long as it's ethical, yeah, I agree with you. I agree. You want somebody there to help you bury the body. I mean, that's a true friend. Yeah. Sorry.
That's like a Breaking Bad episode.
No, as long as it's ethical, like, you know, somebody evil.
Right.
Not a good person's body. An evil person's body.
Well, that's a bad, I mean, it is, and it's literal. Don't take it too literally.
Yeah,
I think you can't take that literally.
Yeah,
but I think that there, but I think what it speaks to is a friendship where it's unconditional, right?
Yeah.
Which is to say, it's almost like you remember that guy when he was a good guy, okay? Mm-hmm. And so even though he gets into this scrape or some negative circumstance, whatever it may be, you know, your first thought isn't, I'm going to not associate with this person anymore. I think that's what we hear a lot of these days is, well, you know, that person did something wrong. I don't think we should associate with them anymore. Whereas a friend says, you know, huh, that's really a shame that the person has found themselves in that place. And in the first thought is, how can I help them get through this?